Hey, this is Chris Atwood of The Alternative on 95.9 WATD. We're at the House of Blues in Boston for the very first show in the United States of an incredible tour featuring Dear Boy, James, and the Psychedelic Furs, where we're going to check in now with Tim Booth from the band James to find out how the band got started, his role in it as it relates to some of the former lead singers who were in and out of it and also in and out of jail. Take it back over to Tim in the band James, 95.9 ATD.
They had something, and they were really, they could only just play their instruments, but it was exciting, and the struggle was exciting, the struggle to play. And they got me in dancing. Within a week, we had a gig supporting Orange Juice in Sheffield. And I was singing backing vocals and dancing. And then within about 5 months, they kicked out the current singer and asked me if I'd sing. And then I had to do lyrics. I'd never done anything like that before in my life, but I just said, yeah, sure.
So the band formed because a bunch of people were sent to jail, and then you became, because of your dancing, your unique dancing, you became the singer for James.
That's about the gist of it.
What were your creative influences musically back then?
I think theirs were things like Joy Division and The Fall. They were, you know, Joy Division and The Fall were playing a lot in Manchester. The Fall gave the original band their first opening slot. New Order gave us, took us on tour with them very early on. And Manchester bands really helped each other out. That was a really good thing about the scene. My influences were really Patti Smith, the Americans, really, The Doors, The Velvet Underground, Iggy. I was more interested in that, much more than... I did like Joy Division. I saw them once and they were really good. And I liked that some of The Fall, and I respect all those bands, but I was just somehow more moved by the Americans.
There's the Manchester scene that we know from Joy Division and eventually New Order and all the bands that came out of there, but there is also a term called the Madchester. So for our listeners who don't know what Madchester means, can you explain a little bit about Madchester as the mad iPhone goes off?
Let me just turn that off. Well, yeah, Tony Wilson coined the phrase Madchester, really based around Happy Mondays and kind of MDMA scene that was going on with the Hacienda, the Stone Roses. And we somehow got roped into it, although we'd been going 7 years by then. And, you know, I'm virtually teetotal. It was always a kind of a weird thing. Like when we took, but we took those bands on tour, as Manchester bands do. We took the Happy Mondays on tour when they were really unknown, and they broke on that tour, and they kept trying to put acid in my water because they knew I didn't drink and didn't take drugs at that time. I was into meditation and really the opposite, but we loved them, and the Mondays were fantastic. They were shambolically crazy, and they really spearheaded the Madchester scene, and because they were mad. You can't imagine how mad the Happy Mondays were. I mean, we took them on a probably 4-week tour. The first gig, they had 3 car crashes on the way to the gig and didn't make it.
Wow.
They had 2 gigs that they had car crashes on the way to and didn't make.
Okay.
The manager had all the money from the first 2 weeks of gigs, and he slept with somebody in the audience, and she stole all the money. They had punch-ups on stage and would like punch each other into the audience.
Yeah.
And they were really like hardcore band.
Wow.
And very cartoon-like. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't as nasty as it sounds. It was more like a cartoon.
Okay.
It was just very, very strange. And we got on very well with them, really strangely.
And that's because you're very different bands.
Very different bands.
Yeah.
And so then we kind of broke around that time, but with a song called Sit Down, which really wasn't a Manchester-type song.
No.
Although Come Home had some of that groove to it.
For the listeners here in the United States, I mean, I was a college radio DJ from 85 to 89. College radio, at the time, we didn't realize that we were sort of making history with what we were playing. But how important was college radio in the late 80s, early 90s for the band James?
I think it was very important. It's really... I mean, our whole we're a very accidental band. Mm-hmm. You know, every song we write through improvisation. Mm-hmm. And we don't sit down to write about anything. There's no songwriter. It's like there's four of us who improvise. Okay. And we get these long jams and then we mess around with them and shape them into pretend songs. Mm-hmm. And we call it going fishing. And we might fish for 100 songs and then pick 14 to work on. Okay. And in the same way, we've never had a business plan. We didn't want to record. Mm-hmm. At the beginning. We believed that a band was good depending on how good it was live. And we were forced into recording because no one would put us on unless we had a record out. Okay. Right. So then we finally capitulated and started recording songs. Mm-hmm. So we had a very kind of purist, weird attitude. So we came to America. We got signed by a major and we came to America, and we didn't understand any of the politics of college radio and all that stuff, but Laid got picked up, and right. It was 2 minutes 20 seconds, and Born of Frustration got picked up, and they became college radio hits, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the record company kind of screwed it up, because at the same time we recorded Laid, we recorded an experimental improvised album, electronica album. Mm-hmm. And we wanted them to come out together. We recorded with Brian Eno, the producer. Mm-hmm. And we wanted it to be a double album, so that on one album would be almost acoustic. Hmm. Kind of lo-fi, and the other album would be mad electronica. Mm-hmm. And the record company wouldn't let us do that. Huh. So Laid came out, and a million people in America bought Laid.
Right.
And then 8 months later, Wah-Wah came out, which was the experimental improvised electronica album. And a lot of people scratched their heads and went,
what
the hell happened to this band? This is really strange. And so nobody understood it. And mm-hmm. It kind of killed us to some degree.
Huh.
But we've always been an accidental band.
So we're kind of moving through the history of the band James.
And I keep sidetracking.
No, I'm sidetracking too. You left the band for a few years. What was it like rejoining James for you? What was different the second time around?
James, like, we loved making music in the 90s. We did 5 albums with Brian Eno as producer, which was, you know, every band on the planet wanted to work with Brian Eno. I had so many bands come up to me and go, how did you get to work with Brian Eno? Chili Peppers, REM, much bigger bands than us. And we were lucky enough to work with Brian for 5 albums. But we were, as a band, we were a bit of a mess. There were a lot of the usual addiction things going on, and we were in a mess. And it was really upsetting to watch people thinking that they might not survive.
Right.
And so I left in 2001 and completely finished. I had no intention of coming back. And then 2006, people came to me and everyone had cleared up and cleaned up and got families and grounded. And so we said, okay, if we can try and start a new way of communicating and a new way of doing this, then let's go for it. And we did. And it was just fantastic, much better than before, much more fun.
So the second time around was better than the first?
Yeah, because we still, you know, we were determined to make lots of new music. Mm-hmm. And if the new music was as good as the old music, then we would continue. Mm-hmm. And to our ears it is, and to a whole new audience that we've got the last 3 albums. In like, we go to Greece and our audience is suddenly 20-year-olds who've all been listening to the last 3 albums, and they don't want to hear the old songs. and they like, it's fascinating. And in England it's getting now much more balanced too. And the kind of fans who come looking for the old music get shouted down by the ones who want to hear the balance.
Right, right.
And so we've got out of that ghetto that I think heritage bands mm-hmm. get stuck in.
Right.
Where you just have to play the hits. We played a lot of hits towards the end tonight.
Yeah.
I didn't write the set list tonight. You'll see. If you look at the set list, they change every night. So
one of the songs that you played tonight, you mentioned all the hits, and I think it was about 5 years ago that you set up on stage, so you answered the question that I was going to ask. But if you can tell me a little bit about the moving on song, but also what I consider to be a very simple but yet powerful video.
So, yeah. I was in Los Angeles and my mum had a fall in her Sheffield home in England. And it was like, oh, you'll never get back in time. And I got on a plane and managed to get back in time. And I had a day and a half with her in hospital before she passed. And it was a really beautiful time holding her and singing to her. And then when she actually died, with me and my sister holding her and my nephew, it was so obviously a birth. That wasn't an idea. Mm-hmm. That was just, oh, it's a birth. Right. And I'd never had anyone talk about death could be beautiful or death could be like a birth. And so the next album, and then I had the opposite experience. My best friend died. I didn't get to say goodbye, and it was deeply distressing. So I had the other experience too, which, you know, after I thought I'd cracked death. So we wrote an album which we called Le Petit Mort, mm-hmm. which is the little death,
right.
Which is also an orgasm. Lots of the songs were about those experiences. Moving On is particularly probably about my mum and my best friend who died. It's one of the most successful of the songs about death. And we had this friend, Ainsley, who was a great animator. And he wrote a script, first of all, for the video. And it wasn't very good. So I talked to him for about 2 hours about my mother passing and my friend passing and my experiences around death. I died when I was 21, stopped breathing in hospital and was revived. And he then went and made this incredible video made out of yarn. And it now gets used in hospices in England for dying children.
Okay.
And the children, if they ask what death is, they get shown the video.
Oh, wow.
And it's so beautiful. He did such an amazing job. So he captured the story of my mum's passing, which was the death and the birth.
Yeah.
And it won awards. I mean, it's a remarkable video. If you want to check us out, check out the Moving On video.
Gone, didn't see it coming. Never said I love you.
In the background, we hear the Psychedelic Furs playing. What's it like being on tour with the Psychedelic Furs?
Oh, it's lovely. They're so at ease and with themselves and who they are. And you know, great band, great voice, fascinating voice, such an interesting voice, such an edge he walks. And we're having a blast.
Yeah.
The album, Living Extraordinary Times, our new album, is right. Very... Because I live in LA, I'm American, as well as being English.
Oh.
I have dual citizenship. And the album's got very strong American themes, because Trump was coming into power
right.
when I was writing the lyrics. And so some of that comes into the record, obviously.
Oh.
So this is the first time we played some of those songs to people, which is really interesting.
So if there's one song that you would want the listeners of The Alternative to listen to off of that new album, what song would that be?
I'd say two songs. And one would be for a more kind of gentle, inclusive song, Many Faces, because it's a really inclusive song. It was written in response to the wall and the racist remarks about immigrants. And the chorus is, there's only one human race, many faces, everybody belongs here. And it's a unifying song about that we are all immigrants here. Right. And then the other song will be Heads, which is... The reason why we love that one is because it doesn't sound like anything we've ever done before. And we love songs that we don't sound like James, right, you know. And it's quite a political song. But it has a very uplifting ending about how we could live together, how we could be in a more sharing culture, mm, rather than the me and the you know, the make America white again, right, culture.
Right. So you've had a long career with the band James, going back to the Inmates, who went off to jail. You joined in 1982. It's now 2019. What's next for Tim Booth and James?
We're taking time out, actually, because we've done about an album every couple of years for the since 2006, mm-hmm, and so we decided to have some time out. I'm writing a novel. I'm three quarters of the way through, so I'm going to finish that. And we're working on some songs, so that will go on in the background. Okay. But we're taking some time out.
Tim, thank you for coming on to the show backstage here at the House of Blues in Boston.
Thank you.
There's only love that's strong. Yeah.